Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by Tom Breeze. Twenty-five years of education in Wales with Dr. Gareth Evans. Hello and a warm welcome back to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, where you've got Tom but not Emma. It's just me podcasting solo today, which means I'm even more grateful than usual that our guest has made the journey down here. It's a friend of the podcast. It's Dr. Gareth Evans, who's Director of Education Policy at the University of Wales Trinity St. David. Welcome back.
Good afternoon.
And you were down the line, I think, last time we spoke.
Yeah, was it during COVID, perhaps?
Yes, I think it was. So it's really nice to actually have you here in person for this one. And you wear many hats, don't you? Because you are also on the Ministerial Advisory Group.
I am, yes.
Committee, yeah. Team.
Yes, one of several, I believe, but yes, invited on. And
For education, so...
A year or so in, I think. I'm still there.
You're still there. For now.
Which is quite something, given recent events, I think.
Yeah. Something may change after this episode. You're here because, well, for a number of reasons, but also because I think it's probably timely as we are hurtling towards what could be some quite seismic Senedd elections in May, to just take a moment to kind of look back over the history of education since devolution in 1999, kind of really dig into where we are at the present and maybe do a bit of crystal ball gazing as well.
Okay, yeah.
And we'll
do all of that in 40 minutes, Tom.
All of that in 40 minutes is your challenge. You've recently published a paper in the Transactions of the Cymru Dorian Society, Education in Devolved Wales, A Story of Contradiction. And so let's dig into some of those contradictions. And for our younger listeners, I suppose, yes, education policy in Wales has been different from that in England since devolution in 1999, the brainchild of Tony Blair.
Yes. Clear red water, as Roger Morgan once said.
Yes.
Yes. So since the turn of the century, really, education in Wales has broken, as you say, from what was historically a version of English rule. We are now, aren't we, ploughing our own furrow? We're doing our own thing. The Welsh Government is responsible for just about every aspect of education policy. So the question that you pose and the question that I would ask as well is, what difference has that made? What difference has that made to the policy landscape? Well, the answer there is fairly straightforward. The answer is a significant difference to the policy landscape. But what difference has it made to teachers? What difference has it made to pupils? Which is ultimately what the education game is all about. And after 25 years now of devolved education policy, I think you would probably have to say, regrettably, that we haven't made the difference that we had hoped, at least, we were going to make. And there are various reasons for that. Some, I think, self-inflicted. Others, totally out of our control, COVID being the most obvious among them. Funding is always something that various politicians and those within the system will use as some sort of defence. But there's this nagging sort of concern about policy decision making. Have we taken the right decisions at the right time? Have we a coherent policy narrative during that 25 years? And the answer is no. We've done lots of quite weird and wonderful things that are rooted in evidence, others not, I would suggest. And all the while, we've sort of flitted from this very data-driven, more punitive approach to one that is more laissez-faire, one that is more teacher-led, and one that gives more power and agency to teachers. And we've kind of gone back and forth, haven't we, over the past 25 years between one and t'other. And I'm sure we'll get into the meat of that in a second.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, you know, you're saying there, you know, greater to a greater or lesser extent based on evidence. How much of it do you think is based on just trying to visibly do the opposite thing to England?
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's sort of obviously political in that respect. I don't think we're trying. And there was a spell, wasn't there? You have got to look at what's happening in Westminster. There was a spell, you mentioned Tony Blair, at the early part of devolution where you had two Labour governments. You've got two Labour governments again now. And there was that big spell in between where you had a Tory-led coalition and a Tory-led government. Was it political that we did things differently? Did we adopt a new curriculum because England wasn't doing it, or because they were doing something? I don't think so. I think there was more an element of newfound freedom and sort of self-confidence in us as a nation. We felt that we now had the opportunity to do things slightly differently, and by God, did we take that opportunity. So I think it was less political and more sort of just ambition, you know. And I admire, actually, the admission, the ambition about trying to do things differently for the betterment of our children. But I think we kind of got carried away a bit by that. We were doing things for the sake of being different, perhaps, for the sake of innovation, and maybe not sticking with stuff for long enough. You know, and I would look back, Tom, you know, as a kind of pivotal moment, the PISA results of 2009 into 2010, the so-called PISA shock that many other countries across the world have since had and will no doubt have moving forward, which sort of instigated this raft, this infamous now 20-point plan of Leighton Andrews to revive our fortunes in effect. We brought back, didn't we, league tables of a variation. I mean, it was school categorization, but it was a way of grouping together schools based on performance. And we brought back national testing, having scrapped SATs some 5 or 6 years earlier. And the real interesting thing, isn't it, is that all of these decisions were taken by a Welsh Labour-led government. So the idea that you can have a government of the same political persuasion over a very long period of time, quite unprecedented, really, isn't it, in the sort of recent history of politics, to have a Labour government ruling our country as they have done, but we have taken very different approaches to how we run and support our education system, very often actually at the whim of an individual. Politics and ministerial decisions are often derived from the person in charge. And if you look at somebody like Leighton Andrews and compare them, let's say, with somebody like Kirsty Williams, or perhaps even somebody like our minister of today, Lynn Neagle, very different people, very different outlooks, very different visions. And that is played out in how they have implemented their policies.
Yeah, some really important points there. And just to pick that up for our either younger or our international listeners, that is a really important point about Wales, which is that since devolution, for that 25 years, the government has always been led by Labour, the left-leaning party here in the UK. And actually, if you go pre-devolution and you look at general election results when there wasn't devolution, I mean, Wales has always been 100 years or more, which is why we're talking about seismic results. The polls suggest that Labour might be about to kind of loosen their grip potentially in Wales for the first time since their formation. And that is a massive deal. You're mentioning some of these kind of things that happened. And actually, you do this really helpfully in the paper, is you divide this last 25 years of devolution in education into three kind of eras.
Yes. Yeah.
So can you just sort of give us a quick potted sort of thing of those three eras so people can get a kind of big picture, and then we might dive into some PISA-y things.
Okay, so let's go then from the early 2000s to those PISA results of 2009 that I've mentioned. We had a period of innovation. We introduced things like the most obviously the foundation phase, Scandinavian-inspired, learn through play, making better use of the outdoors, listening more to our children, particularly in the early stages of their education. Brought in by still is the longest serving of our education ministers, Jane Davidson, and is really the seminal policy of her time. It is still, isn't it, around in a variation. It's called Foundation Learning now. It has been subsumed by the new national curriculum here in Wales. But that was kind of her baby. She brought in the Welsh Baccalaureate. She took us into PISA. It was a time where we had the sort of early echelons of our new Welsh curriculum that predates the current one. We were doing things in a particularly Welsh way, we were breaking from the Westminster tradition. But it was very much, it felt like a time of innovation where teachers were given more freedom, more respect. We got rid of sats and league tables, as I mentioned. So there was this idea that teachers were being given more responsibility and were being trusted more as professionals to make the right decisions by their children. The PISA results of 2009, published later in 2010, were kind of that, John Kingdon calls it a sort of turning event, you know, an event that triggers a change in direction. And we had then, didn't we, a much more forensic eye on data. We had more accountability born into the system, and we had a raft of measures that were going to respond to the deficiencies that PISA had identified. Leighton Andrews was the key protagonist, you know, a very different person to Jane Davidson, had a very clear view of what needed to be done and how it needed to be done. And still, I think, and I write in the piece, that he's either reviled or revered. People look back very fondly on those times as kind of a reality check and somebody who was talking real sense at a time we needed a bit of a kick up the backside. And others saw him as a bit of a disruptor, somebody who caused more problems than he did offer solutions. And I know from experience of working around the system then that a lot of teachers didn't like some of the sort of home truths that he was sharing in quite the same, you know, in quite the language he was using. He was quite famous, wasn't he, for being very bombastic and very to the point. But he certainly got his message across. That sort of period of, let's call it accountability, lasted for 3 or 4 years, possibly into the fifth year when the new curriculum heralded, I think, a new phase of education for Wales, that third phase, which is again kind of, a reversion to the first phase. So we're empowering more, aren't we, our teachers? We're putting more faith in the profession, and we're rowing back from some of those more punitive forms of accountability. So the system has lurched from one mode to another, very much, as I say, on the whim of a particular minister, not a change in government or anything like that. You know, policy analysts across the world talk about the sensitivities around politics and the fact that an agenda can be torn up at the ballot box. That is not true in Wales. We've had that permanence across 25 years, yet it hasn't resulted in a continuity of policy. And that is, I think, well, it's borne out, isn't it? The OECD talks about reform fatigue, teachers being fed up by the amount of stuff they've had thrown at them. And one could argue that we are still fatigued now responding to the new curriculum. There are always new policies coming in online. And as you say, come next spring, we'll have a new government, I suspect, potentially, most likely, of a different political persuasion, a new minister, new ideas, new vision for what needs to happen. And so we go through that cycle all over again. You know, no wonder teachers get frustrated by the external environment, I think, in which they work.
Yeah, and you mentioned PISA there as being this really important moment where there was a bit of a wake-up call. And there's no getting away from the fact that whatever you think of PISA, it is the game in town where international comparisons are to be found. And there's no getting away from it that Wales has not done very well in PISA. We're bottom in terms of UK nations. If we were taking it on our own instead of as part of the UK in the PISA rankings, I think we would be, is it 34th or something, somewhere just above Vietnam. We haven't done particularly well in PISA. Some argue that it's down to the fact that there is quite a lot of poverty in Wales. You know, it's not the economic powerhouse that England is, although that has been very much argued against by people like the Institute for Fiscal Studies, hasn't it? As in, they say that the average child in Wales does worse than the most deprived child in England. I mean, what is going on there? Is Leighton Andrews right? Are we just complacent and not very good?
Well, to respond to that direct point, I think we probably were complacent during the course of the last 25 years. And I think there are pockets of our system that are complacent today, not helped by some dubious policy decisions, not helped by a lack of funding. you know, and it's interesting, isn't it? Ministers will always tell you that they're putting more money in, and there are good international examples of countries doing very well on much less than we get, for example. But in real terms, our funding is not what it was. School, any, you ask any school in Wales, they will tell you that things are tough out there at the moment. You know, so I'm very much solution focused. I'm about what can we do to make that situation better. We can give schools things, give teachers things to make their lives easier, to help make them teach better, produce better learning environments, and so on. Does that respond to your question? No, it doesn't. But my issue with PISA is not necessarily the international comparison, because it's very difficult, isn't it, to compare Wales with Singapore or Wales with China or Shanghai, but different provinces around the world, Ontario, Canada, that perform particularly well because they're culturally so very different. It's like comparing apples and oranges. You can't do it. But what you can do, I think, much more soundly is compare our performance with that in England, with that in Scotland, with that in Ireland, who are performing particularly well at the moment, actually, in PISA. So I think there are more lessons we can learn from our nearest neighbours than those internationally. There are flaws in the methodology used within PISA. There's a very famous example that is well trodden in Vietnam. PISA tests the performance of 15-year-olds in state education, which pretty much means, doesn't it, in Wales, that all of our children are subject to a PISA study, you know, compulsory education finishing at 16. In Vietnam, children can drop out much sooner, so the implication is those that are less academic, those that are less likely to perform well in PISA, drop out earlier, and so you're left with the so-called better student. And so the results are skewed and are inflated because of the design of the study itself. So you can't read everything into PISA, and it is a very narrow measure of attainment. There is much more, as we're so often told, within the auspice of the new curriculum to education and literacy, numeracy, science, and so on. But the other issue, and this kind of brings us into the modern day, Tom, if I may, I have with things like PISA is we in Wales, the Welsh government has put a huge stock in PISA. I don't think that's necessarily media-led as an ex-media man. The media responds to what happens, responds to what the government does and tells them. And if government is constantly using PISA as the justification for change, you know, they are holding themselves to some extent hostage to fortune. So some of this stuff is, although this pressure on PISA is self-inflicted, I think, which does raise the question as to why the current minister might have seen fit to join two other iterations of international testing in TIMSS and PIRLS, which are the, I don't know the acronyms in full offhand, but one is interested in literacy and reading and the other in maths and science, I think. TIMSS and PIRLS, I just think it sounds like a sort of sweet shop fair, doesn't it? Half a pound of TIMSS and a bag of PIRLS, you know. Silly acronyms, but why then have we chosen to join two more? You know, weighing the pig doesn't make it any fatter. You know, we know our issues. We know that we're not where we want to be in literacy and numeracy. We don't need PISA to tell us that. We don't need TIMSS and PIRLS, frankly, to tell us that. ESTIN tell us it more often than we'd care to admit. We know what our issues are. Let's focus on making some good policy decisions rather than joining yet more measurements.
I also wonder, you know, given that we're interested in these international results like PISA, I was really taken by the quote from Leighton Andrews that you've got in your paper, which is he's sort of saying, we're making the mistake of assuming that what we need to do is go from good to great, but actually what we need to do is go from kind of not very good to a bit better. Whatever else the reforms have been in the last sort of 10 years or so, curriculum for Wales, the initial teacher education reforms, whatever you may think of them, you know, you can't deny, I think, that they're very, very aspirational. You know, they're very challenging. They are, you know, really kind of getting rid of any sort of ceilings, although arguably also removing the floor at the same time. Are we making the same mistake that he's talking about there? You know, we've got a very aspirational thing, and yet the thing that we're interested in is telling us we're not very good.
Yeah, and I think this is, I'll answer your question in a slightly different way. and literacy and numeracy, actually, which is kind of one of the fundamentals that PISA is interested in, that we all should be interested in, is kind of front and centre here. In adopting a radical, transformational, progressive, call it what you will, new curriculum that does, you know, fundamentally ask different questions of the teaching profession and us all as educators, at least not ourselves, in and around ITE and in the university system, we are having to do things differently, think anew our practices, our approaches, our pedagogies. Have we, in doing that, taken our eye off some of the more fundamental stuff, like the literacy and numeracy? You know, is that why our PISA scores are kind of rooted where they are, because we keep flitting and being diverted? A teacher's time is finite. Anybody's in education is finite. So they can't do everything all at once. They are only human. So are we overpowering the very people that we need to make this stuff work? And I think we have been guilty of doing that. The literacy and numeracy framework, as introduced by Leighton Andrews in 2012, 13, I think it came in as statutory. Perfect example. Came in to, you know, it was one of the principal things he thought would reinvigorate our system, would get us back on a better footing, and more importantly, boost our standards of literacy and numeracy. And for some time, I think it was gaining traction. The LNF for younger readers, listeners, viewers, was a planning tool, in effect, wasn't it? It supported teachers to plan literacy and numeracy across the curriculum. If you can still find it online, if you have a look, it's a sort of checklist with lots of little criteria in there. Very useful. I think teachers found it quite helpful. And actually, you know, one could argue that it played out in the results of the PISA results of 2018, because the only sort of ray of hope in the last five or six PISA tranches was 2018, pre-COVID, 2018, when there was a spike across all three disciplines. We'd been gradually getting worse in each, and then there was a really noticeable improvement in all three domains. And I would, you know, stick my head on the block a bit, I would put the LNF down as a reason or a cause of that. But what did we do? We introduced a new curriculum for Wales, which kind of, you know, it's not to say that the curriculum for Wales dismisses the, or reduces in any way, waters down the value of literacy and numeracy. Of course it doesn't. But it became part of a bigger machine. It got swallowed up, I think, in the detail. And did we therefore, as a system, take our eye off that key ball? And Leighton Andrews, I'm sure we'll move on from him. He's long since passed. Let's not dig up those memories. But had a phrase, a phrase that was agreed, I believe, by government at the time when he was in post, to describe the so-called failings of his Labour administration. We took our eyes off the ball, and one could argue, and I would perhaps argue, regrettably, we might have dropped a few more balls since.
I was quite struck by a chunk of your paper, which was headed Suppression of Dissenting Voices. And you make the point that there tends to be a kind of emphasis on good news. There tends to be, it's almost like a reaction maybe to the Leighton Andrews days of the draconian, the kind of, we're all complacent, we're not very good. But you quote the Geraint Talvan Davis, former BBC Wales controller, talking of Wales as the land of the pulled punch. You talk about a sea of flattery, parochialism and self-interest. It's harsh stuff, Gareth.
I mean, I was on form that day.
You were on form that day. Yeah. What do you think's going on there? Because you're not the only person to suggest that there's a little bit of an overemphasis sometimes on the good news and a minimising of the not so good.
I think, as you were speaking then, I think that is definitely true, isn't it, of the curriculum for Wales. I share, as I'm sure you do, as I'm sure listeners do, in the ambition, the goal, the end goal. You know, why are we doing this? We're doing it for the right reasons. I think we all hope and want for a better system as a result. But I think some, particularly those in positions of power, are suffering from some form of Pollyanna syndrome, where they see only the good and the optimistic in things. I think we need in Wales sometimes a bit of a reality check, and you get that by asking people out in the system what they think and how they experience things, which is, you know, the beauty of my job. I get to spend a lot of time in and out of schools, and teachers increasingly tell me that they are frustrated by the incoherence inherent within the curriculum, the fact that there is some level of variation baked in, which means that they find it very difficult sometimes to marry together what the guidance tells them to do and what they think they should be doing, or what they think government and others, the inspectorate, wants them to do. I'll come to that in a second, but to respond to this idea of, it's sort of groupthink, isn't it? If you get the same faces, and we've all seen them, I won't name drop people now, it wouldn't be right or proper to do so, but there are people with positions of, you know, Walter Humes calls them narrative privilege, people who write their story about how things are working in education. We turn to a lot of the same people who tell us a lot of the same things, who aren't necessarily always based in Wales or spend time in Welsh schools, who don't see maybe what you, me and others on the ground see. So I think government needs to get a little better at listening to some of those. And I think they confuse sometimes, you know, people who are genuinely quite shouty and argumentative for the sake of being so. You know, I would hope that I don't fall into that category. And those who are genuinely concerned and want the best for our education system, who challenge, you know, in a sort of softer sense of the word, some of the decisions that government takes. It's only right that we hold people in power to account. And we've got to move away from this idea of groupthink, where we keep going to the same people who tell us the same things, who tell us that we're doing okay, and hope that these sort of negative views, these naysayers, will sort of drift off into the distance. It doesn't work like that. So I would hope moving forward, you know, and credit to the minister for inviting, you know, idiots like me onto her advisory group. She is, I think, willing to listen. She has shown herself willing to listen. It's what she does now and what future ministers tend, you know, are inclined to do with the varied advice they are given, you know, and it makes for better policy when we listen to different views.
So we've kind of arrived at the present day, I suppose, and we've got a new curriculum, we've got some relatively new teacher education, we've got a bit of a mixed picture, haven't we? I mean, you can find some good news stories, you can see some good Eston inspections here and there. You also see some less good news stories. I mean, there's obviously the big argument that's raging at the moment around the teaching of reading to the early years. You've got the Eston report about maths, which we covered on this podcast. What's your sense, as somebody who's kind of had an eye on this for quite a long time in your previous life as an education correspondent, and now, how would you, if you were doing the report card, what would you be writing on it?
Well, can and must do better, I would suppose. And it's not for want of trying, is it? I don't think any minister can stand accused, actually, of not, you know, pulling their weight, not giving things a good go, not wanting the best for Welsh children. There's no question of that, to my mind. But we do make some slightly curious decisions. The curriculum, as it stands, as I say, full of ambition, and has to some extent reinvigorated, I think, some in our system who had become disengaged, is still, for me, light on detail, light on substance. And I know there will be some, you know, throwing various things at their speakers as I say it, but there is an issue. There is an issue baked into the curriculum around variation of experience. If teachers are not told what to do, to a greater or lesser extent, and how to do it, you open the door to rampant variation, which is exactly the thing that we have been trying to iron out in Wales for the last 15 years. So we are going against our own grain, as it were. You know, we are ripping up the Leighton Andrews mantra around consistency and simplicity and making sure that teachers had everything they needed to succeed. I don't doubt that there are some fabulous teachers and schools in our system. We both know that. But there are others who need more support. That is a fact of life. So they need more support. Where do they get that support? And they get that support largely through curriculum guidance available on the Welsh Government's Hub platform. And they get that from various players in the middle tier, the regional consortia, as was, local authorities, and increasingly now universities and the private sector. But that official Welsh Government marked, and I think that's important as well. Guidance needs to be kite marked by government, approved by government, for schools to really invest and to buy into it, is often, in my experience, not good enough. The guidance itself is not good enough. And in coming to this very enjoyable conversation today, I came slightly prepared, and I was looking last night at, and here's an example for you, readily available on Hub, the Supporting Learner Progression Assessment Guidance. Progression now being a much bigger part of the teaching lexicon in Wales. This document available for all to see now as I sit next to you at this table. There is a line in here that says, assessment should not be used to make a one-off judgment on the overall achievement of a learner at a set age or point in time. Very clear, unequivocal, that assessment should not be age-related. About three or four paragraphs later, within the same document available on the Welsh Government's website, the role of the practitioner is to plan for and provide effective learning experiences that are appropriate to the age and development of each learner. Later on, learners, the role of the learner is to participate in and contribute to the learning process in a way that is appropriate to their age. So within the same Welsh Government documentation, one side of A4, there are conflicting messages. Little wonder teachers get confused. And that to me is a perfect exemplification of the curriculum. It means everything and nothing all at once. It's not specific, it's too broad. What is the curriculum? And I think we're falling into this slightly unfortunate trap where we're kind of stuck between two worlds. I've written about it before, but I was reflecting on it the other day. Do you remember that film in the 90s, Stargate?
Not seen it.
Kurt Russell. It's like this sort of metal, weird and sort of, it's like a time portal thing. And they leave one world and they jump into this Stargate and they come out in another world. And we're kind of stuck, I think. Teachers are stuck in this, I think they call them wormholes, don't they? Those bits between worlds. I think that's a genuine term, by the way. I've got it from somewhere. I have to look it up. And we don't know what we want to be. We don't know if we want to fully go into this new world and embrace this new world. If we do, we've got to change more radically qualifications. We've got to be clearer in our guidance about what we want teachers to do and not do. And we've got to wise up on inspection, because inspection at the moment isn't speaking, I don't think, to the current curriculum. Or are we so wedded to qualification, the old world, data, the LNF, that we want to jump back into the old world? What is it that we want our system to be? And I think we've got into this unfortunate position where ministers, policymakers, and we ourselves as a system don't know quite where we want to go. And if we want to go all out, we've got to go all in. And we haven't yet.
The qualifications one is an interesting one, actually, isn't it? At the risk of going off on a bit of a tangent here. The qualifications were kept under wraps for a really long time and then turned out to be single subject GCSEs,
yeah.
which are not radically different in many cases from what went before. And that's had quite an effect, I think, on the way people are feeling and which direction they want to go down this wormhole.
Yeah, and I think that the issue with qualifications, isn't it, primarily, is that we are so wedded to the tripartite between Northern Ireland and England. GCSE and A-level brand is very strong. It's well respected, it's well known, it's well used by employers, by universities, by parents. Parents know what their child is going to get or not get. I think to break free from that would actually be very brave and quite risky. And it comes to me, the qualification stuff always comes back to the famous Thomas Kuhn stuff around fundamental change. Fundamental change being premised on two things. One, evidence that the current system is not working, proof that what we're currently doing is not effective. And number two, the availability of something demonstrably better. And with qualifications, I think we've agreed on point one. I think we know that the current system doesn't serve all learners, but I don't think we've quite arrived at a point where we know that for sure what we're going to do differently is markedly better. So we're kind of sticking with what we've got.
this conversation could really run and run, couldn't it? But I'm aware that we will test the patience of our listeners if we don't sort of...
What are you trying to say? Are they bored of me already?
No. I'm saying we've already been thrown out of our studio. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I can't let you go without a bout of crystal ball gazing. I hope you brought your crystal ball along with your Welsh Government document examples, because as I said at the start, yeah, we are staring, as this hits the airwaves, we really are staring down the barrel of an election that could be quite a big deal. Have you got any sense from your long experience of looking at these things what we might be looking at the other side of May? Because it seems likely that it's not going to be a Labour government. I could be, you know, that could age badly, but yeah, it seems likely that it's going to at least involve perhaps Plaid Cymru, who are quite a left-leaning nationalist party, or possibly Reform, who lean quite significantly in the other direction. Any predictions you'd like to age badly?
No, other than, as you rightly say, the polls would suggest there will be a change, which, again, I've always, you know, I pride myself on being completely apolitical and not taking a political view on things. But I think actually a change might be a good thing. For the very reason Leighton Andrews spoke about 15 years ago. I think the current incumbent, after 25 years, has become complacent. And that maybe is kind of a natural condition. And you do something for long enough, you're in a position for long enough. I think it's probably human nature that you get a bit settled and you get a bit comfortable. So I don't think a political change of some persuasion might not necessarily be a bad thing. I'm always open, as you would probably expect me to be, to fresh ideas. Having somebody with a clean pair of eyes come in, look at things anew. What I do think is that there will probably be a raft of reviews. If I was to sort of guess or preempt one thing, it would probably be that. If there is a new minister of a new political party coming into government, they would want to find out what's been going on, get beneath the surface. So don't be at all surprised, earnest readers, listeners, viewers, if a new minister comes in and starts reviewing everything left, right and centre, reviewing, you know, and possibly even reviewing the curriculum. You know, taboo for saying it, but why not? We've been doing it now for 10 years, or it was first hatched a decade ago, and I think the beauty of curriculum reform is it never stops. So it is always open to new iteration, to refinement. You know, I don't see this as a ripping up and starting again. Absolutely not. That would be the worst possible thing we could do. But another look at what's working well and what isn't, and what we might do to make the thing work a little bit better. So I would anticipate a raft of new reviews. I would recommend, actually, a review of the curriculum, albeit recognising very clearly that whoever undertakes said review will come with a particular worldview, will have their own lens, will have their own political persuasion, whether they know it or not, and will take us in a particular direction, very much like Graham Donaldson did. You know, that's not to say he did the right thing or the wrong thing, but everybody comes with their own background, their own experience, will have a particular view on something. So choosing who to review will be very important, and I think insightful, because it will give us a feel for what they may or may not say. I think that's definitely in the offing. The other thing, Tom, and I've said this to one or two friends in the political world, both within government and out, I would absolutely 100% focus all of my energies on the teacher. We know that teaching makes a difference, is the biggest determinant of pupil success. So one thing I do think we've got wrong in Wales is not focusing enough of our time on supporting the profession. Teachers in Wales have some of the highest contact hours time in the OECD. What can we do to free up some of that space for reflection, for reading, for research? And let's face it, getting abreast of curriculum change. You know, how many teachers in Wales have the time to sit down and really look through the detail of the documentation that sits on Hub, very unhelpfully, I would add, on Hub? You know, you can't print it off, and if you do print it off, it comes out in about 1,500 pages. Why we couldn't have a nice glossy, curriculum document or guide or something that we could have sent to all school. I don't know. I'm going off on an angry tangent. We should have better supported our profession to enact the changes that we've asked them to do. So I would, my advice to a forthcoming minister, whether it be Lindneagh or somebody else, would be focus all of your time and energy on teachers, what we can do to better support the teaching profession.
Well, Dr. Gareth Evans, it's been a pleasure having you give us the benefit of your perspectives. And if anybody would like to find your most recent paper, it's not the easiest to find, is it? It's not on the standard journal article system. But we can find it in the Cymru Dorion website. Is that correct?
Yes, you can. And if you wanted to drop me an email, I'm sure I could avail you of a version of it and at no cost for all those many people out there who want to read what I've got to say. But look, I hope, Tom, what I have done this afternoon is share some of the wider concerns and thoughts and feelings that I pick up on my journeys around the country. So you know, I always say that my stuff is not necessarily my stuff. It's stuff that I've picked up along the way. And I hope to be a mouthpiece for some of those people who maybe don't get the opportunity to speak in quite the same way that I do and can.
Well, thank you for joining us with this discussion. Elections just around the corner, and we'll see what comes on the other side of the wormhole. Dr. Gareth Evans, I'm sure we'll have you back at some point soon. And to our listeners, as ever, we'll be back with a normal episode in 2 weeks' time. You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by me, Tom Brees. The special guest this episode was Dr. Gareth Evans, Director of Education Policy at the University of Wales, Trinity St. David. Thanks to Gareth for coming in. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support from Peter Lamburn and the studio manager is Adrian Rapps. We're on various social media at Talk Teaching Pod if you want to come and say hello. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching.